DC politicians want to enact harmful credit card mandates that could take away your cash back and rewards points. Perks that stretch your budget and make life a little easier. Losing these benefits means less money for your family's everyday essentials like gas and groceries. The perks you rely on could disappear, leaving you with higher costs and fewer options. Tell Congress to guard your card and oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card mandates.
Paid for by Electronic Payments Coalition.
Hi, I'm Shauna Meyerson with the Yoga of War podcast. Thank you for joining me for an extraordinarily special episode with miracle worker and hero, Sagi Dovev. If you appreciate and find value in these important discussions, please consider supporting the show so I can continue to bring you such amazing and esteemed guests. Details are pinned in the comments below. On October 5th, 2023, International Jiu-Jitsu champion and IDF elite special ops trainer Sagi Dovev launched SOAR Team, a resilience training program with a roster of lucrative contracts already in place. Decades of tireless work was about to pay off in tremendous dividends. 2 days later, the October 7th pogrom was unleashed on Israel, and Sagi immediately packed his bag. Without a moment's hesitation, he dropped everything and drove into the melee. A reservist in the IDF Special Forces, he went straight to Sheba Hospital to help the most severely injured soldiers. And he's been there every day since. Sagi shuttered his brand new business and gave up everything to fulfill a self-funded mission to do anything and everything possible to help the soldiers rebuild their lives and regain their personal power. And he did it simply for the joy of helping others. While Hamas has played a game of intense psychological warfare, Sagi has equipped an entire army of warriors with mindsets of steel that only get stronger the more that they are challenged. Israel is a land of miracles, and Sagi is a miracle worker. As he says, true strength is measured by the size of the heart, not the number of limbs. Infinitely humble, he always makes his soldiers the heroes of the story. But let's be clear. Sagi is the most superhuman of heroes, and he has a heart of solid gold. Sagi Dovev is an international trainer and lecturer, as well as a resilience building consultant and a trainer of wounded soldiers. He's also a former Israeli and European jiu-jitsu champion. Dovev served as the head trainer of elite units in the Israel Defense Forces. He retired from active service as a major in December of 2022, but he continues to serve in the reserves. Since October 7th, he's been assisting in the training and rehabilitation of wounded soldiers from his unit, many of whom are amputees. Alongside two other officers, Dovev co-founded a company specializing in resilience building workshops. His international lectures cover topics such as setting goals, heroism, disaster, reconstruction, and building resilience. His current goal is to motivate, inspire, and build resilience within the Jewish people worldwide. Sagi, I don't know if I have ever been so in awe of a human's kindness and decency than I have been watching you. Thank you so very, very much for making the time to join us today.
Thank you. Shalom. Good evening to me. Good evening. Good morning to you. That was the longest introduction I've gotten ever, I think. But I appreciate it. So thank you very much.
You deserve so much more. So let's get into it. On October 6th, you were going into Shabbat and Simchat Torah, one of the most joyous holidays of the year. You had a brand new business, international contracts in place, and a tremendous future ahead of you. But on October 7th, everything changed. Can you tell us what unfolded for you that day?
Correct. So 6:28, I was in bed at home, wife, kids. Woke up to the sounds of missiles, as everybody else did in Israel that morning. And I knew what was going on immediately. You know, people in Israel didn't know what the heck is going on that morning. But it took me a couple of minutes and I knew exactly what was going on. I got the videos from, you know, the terrorists already broadcasting everything live. Today we know most of the videos, but that night, because I'm in, you know, many WhatsApp groups and special security groups, and I got them all, and I knew it's not fake news. I knew it's full on war, and I knew what was going on. And I said, okay, I'm packing a bag. I told my wife, my kids, that he has to go to base, and I started, you know, organizing everything. And then I started driving to base down south. That was that morning. That's how that happened.
How far away are you from the Sheba Medical Center where you've been volunteering every day?
My house is about 20 minutes away, but I went down south and I turned around, and then I decided to go to Sheba Hospital to start treating and helping the soldiers of my unit, my soldiers that they were the first responders to the attacks. So they were the first one wounded and flown to the hospitals. So I decided to go to Sheba Hospital and start helping them, and stayed there since October 7th.
Have you missed a single day?
Only when I went to the States with amputees to get them prosthetics. So
that doesn't count as missing a day. That counts as double duty, actually. So from what I understand, the first few months that you spent at the hospital, basically you were just helping patients like any way you could. You're helping them eat, you're bringing them gifts, you're comforting their families. At what point did you decide that like Krav Maga resilience training would be your best way of being of service? And what prompted that decision, that shift?
True. So at the beginning, that was my reserve service. I was, you know, I was stationed at the hospital helping the soldiers, the wounded soldiers from the unit, taking them to surgeries, speaking to doctors, helping their families, calling their girlfriends, bringing them food, you name it. You know, I just, you, whatever I could do, I did. That was the first couple of months. Of course, we had many, many, many talks, and they felt bad with themselves. They felt disabled. You know, one day they were elite soldiers, elite fighters, elite athletes. It doesn't matter, you know, 19, 18, 19, 20, 21 year olds in the prime of their lives, and they could do anything, and they did anything. They did everything. They were, you know, everywhere around the world in duty. And they could have done anything. And the next day, they're in bed in a hospital, not able to take a shower by themselves, not able to, you know, you name it, needing help to drink coffee from a straw. So they told me, listen, you know, we look at you and you give us so much strength, just the way, you know, you look and you act, and we know who you are and what you do and what you gave us in the unit, and you're, you know, I was many years, I was head of close combat and Krav Maga and resilience building. This is what I did my entire career, my entire life. So they said, you give us strength just from being here, but, you know, we need something else. We, you know, so I was thinking, you know, they started then after a couple of months, they started rehabilitating. They opened a section for rehabilitation just for soldiers. They didn't have it before. They opened sections. They still have it, of course. Rehabilitation centers just for soldiers. And you know, I said, okay, what can I, you know, what can I do? What can I, what is my purpose here? And then I said, okay, I build resilience. I am a trainer. I do Krav Maga. This is what I did my entire life. I just spent a year building an amazing workshop to build resilience. I'll, you know, I'll mesh it all up and this is what I'll do. And I started training, you know, martial arts, Krav Maga, wrestling, boxing, it does self-defense, it doesn't matter, whatever you want to call it, MMA. I did it all, but you know, each one was his own disability, with his own injury. One lost a limb, one lost a leg, one lost a hand, one lost two hands, one lost two legs and an arm, one lost two legs and two arms. So you know, each one I had to think of a way he could start training, and I could, you know, we have a goal, and I told him, you know, I will get you on your feet. And, you know, at the end of the road, end of the journey, you will stand up and you will fight me. And that's the, you know, that's the end of the journey for us. That's our goal. And if you can see the videos, you see that I've reached that goal with many, 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 many soldiers. You know, unfortunately, hundreds. But fortunately for me, as I always say, it's my privilege, really. I always say it's the biggest privilege in my life that I could do help our heroes. And I say our heroes because it's not the Israeli heroes. It's the Jewish people heroes. It's the Western world heroes. They are protecting, you know, everyone. They are protecting you. Sitting in, where are you, LA?
Yes.
Sitting in LA, making beautiful podcasts, doing whatever you can do. We are, and they are protecting you, and that's what I'm trying to make people understand. So it's the biggest privilege that I have. So this is how I started doing it, and okay. And eventually, it became not only the soldiers of my unit, but everybody that was in the hospital said, "Sagi, please train me. Please, can you train me?" And I. And I couldn't say no. I was my reserves unit was over. My reserves was over. I didn't get paid for it anymore. They told me at base, come to base and train at base. And I said, you know, I can't leave the hospital. Too many soldiers need me. Too many soldiers are dependent on me. Too many soldiers, you know, I felt like I give much more. I'm much more needed at the hospital than at base. So I decided just to volunteer 24/7 with all the wounded soldiers, and eventually released hostages, started coming to the hospital. You know, it seems like such a long time ago, but once we got released hostages, so they came to the hospital and they wanted to train as well to build their confidence, their resilience. And of course, I couldn't say no as well. So this is what I do. This is what I do 24/7.
What an honor. As you can tell, as super pro as I am, I'm probably going to cry throughout this entire episode. Sagi, I've never watched a single video of yours without crying, and that's the God's honest truth. And just as a side note, I think that what stands out for me the most in your videos is the radiant smile that is on your face when one of your soldiers pins you to the floor wrestling, that you're just like, you are gaining your power from their power. And it's so obvious from watching you. And I want to get into questions, but I do want to encourage everybody to go to Sagi's Instagram. It's in the show notes, and just watch them all. They're unbelievable. But Sagi, I want to take one quick step back because of the unbelievably extraordinary human being that you are, on top of this tremendous daily commitment, which you are doing on a volunteer basis. And for what I understand, you've even taken out personal loans to subsidize this project. You also happen to be father of the year to three children. While your wife goes to work during the day. So could you just lay out really quickly, what does your typical day look like?
So first of all, in my lecture, when I come and do presentations when I do speaking engagements, I have a lecture and I say, you know, when I introduce myself and I give all my titles and all my professional and army and then I say at the end, but my most important title is I'm a family man and I'm a father to three beautiful little kids. And they are really my pride and my joy. They are 6, 3, and 1 year old babies, kids. And then so because I volunteer, someone has to work. So my wife wakes up very early. She wakes up at 5 o'clock and she goes to work. So I have to, I get up, I get my kids, three kids ready for kindergarten. I take them to kindergarten, go back home to fix the mess. And then I drive to Sheba Hospital. So I train there between around 9 o'clock to 3:30. And then I go pick up the three kids from kindergarten, wait till the wife comes back from work. Then again, the next morning, same.
Well, I think that you're mitigating a little bit on what you actually do. It is now 8:15 in Israel and we are stopping. We have a hard shot stop at 9 p.m. because you have someone coming to work with you. From what I understand, your phone is open 24/7 to support your soldiers.
It is. It is because, you know, they might, some of them need me in the middle of the night. Some have nightmares. Some have, you know, all kinds of issues. And I'm here to, you know, this is, I always say, you know, what you see on Instagram, what you see on my social media, the videos, that's just the end result of a whole process of many, many weeks and months and a relationship and trust being built. So you know, that's the point. It's a long journey. I eat breakfast with them and I get them, I bring them lunch. Sometimes I get, you know, sponsors, they want to sponsor lunch and I go and I buy lunch from a restaurant and I hand it out and you know, we eat together and we talk and we share and I take them to, sometimes I get tickets to comedy shows at the evening or whatever, basketball games. And it's about bonding, it's about sharing, it's about feeling confident, you know, because when we train, some training, let's say a double amputee in the beginning, he will fall on his face. Right. He will fall on his face and he needs to feel very comfortable to be, you know, vulnerable and be, you know, in front of someone. So it's, we're building a very strong relationship and trust between us. So yes, 9 o'clock, I'm training Dor Almog, which is, he's an amazing guy. He's the lone survivor of one of the most, of the saddest incidents in this war. 21 of his friends died next to him in the collapsing of a building. And he wants to be an MMA fighter. He wants me to train him for an MMA fight in the UFC, which I am. I'm training him and he will get to the, we will come to the UFC in a, it's going to be an amateur fight, yeah, but still we are going to be there. So I'm training him a couple of times a week. So whenever we have time, he has time, I have time. So
it sounds like you guys need to find your way to Joe Rogan, by the way. So
if anybody has connections, please reach out.
I do have one remote connection. I don't know that it could pan out, but it's definitely a suggestion that I'm going to make after this is on the books. So let me make a quick suggestion. Your photo, which makes you look like a total badass, you have the softest, kindest heart. It just feels like there should be a smile. But that being said, let me ask a question on technique. When you're training your soldiers, would you characterize your style as tough love or just plain love?
Most of my career was very, it wasn't even, you know, it was tough. It was toughness. It was... elite soldiers, it was very, we call it distance in the army. You know, there's no smiling to my soldiers. There is no fun and games. This is very, very military hardcore training to build their resilience. You know, there's no there is no room for joking around or smiling, because you know it's part of the game. It's part of the military game. But of course, I was different. I was mature. I wasn't an 18-year-old Krav Maga instructor. I was a 40-plus-year-old, instructor at the end of my career, and it comes with a lot of things. So they already felt like my younger brothers. I wouldn't say sons. They could have been my sons, but they felt like younger brothers. And I always felt like I'm in a mission to help the country and help the Jewish people, but in the hospital, sometimes it depends, but mostly it's tough love, I think, because it's a lot of love, because you know, yeah, I have to get to them, I have to open their hearts, I have to gain trust, I have to most of them know me from my military career. They know I'm a tough guy. They know I'm a badass. It's not, I don't have to prove anything to anyone. You know, I'm not playing that game. I just want them to get better, to rehabilitate, to believe in themselves, to, you know, and to do great stuff for themselves and for the nation. And they will, and they are.
This is such an extraordinary life mission, Sagi. And it's so obvious to me, and I think to everybody who follows you, that you were sent to this earth to do God's work. And in, like it or not, you are a miracle worker. You have been volunteering in hospitals since you were a teenager. Rare for a teen, but I would say particularly rare for a teenage boy. And about 18 years ago, no coincidence at 18, I guess, it represents life. You saved a baby's life by donating to her your bone marrow. So could you tell the audience, where is she today? And at that time, did you expect that donation to touch your life as profoundly as it has?
Wow, you did your research.
I always do.
So, yes, it was 18 years old. Yeah, 18 years ago. Actually, it's a funny story. I volunteered in the organization that does the test, the matching tests. And I volunteered there. And one day they said, okay, you were found positive to donate bone marrow. And of course, you know, I had no, in a split second, I said, yes, of course, you know, saving life is the most, the most important thing you can do. She was a baby girl, almost a 1 year old baby who had a disease, and she needed bone marrow, and I donated, and it saved her life. And today she's a soldier in the army. She volunteered. She didn't have to do army because of her situation, but she volunteered, and she's in the military, and we are in good relationship, and she's an amazing young girl. And yeah, so it's a special feeling. So again, a privilege for me.
It sounds, from what I've read about Leary, that she's become, in essence, not just somebody that you know what's going on, but a part of your family. And yeah. I'm wondering, do you think that the joy and the gratification that you've had from watching her grow up into a strong and healthy young woman contributed to your decision to drop everything and commit to helping wounded warriors regain their lives and personal power?
Maybe in the back of my mind, you know, I wouldn't say it was, you know, I was thinking about it the whole time. Maybe, you know, there's a lot of things happening in the back of your mind and your subconscious or your above conscious. I don't know how they, you know, you call it today in a professional way. But it's not like one incident that made me think that this is what I'm going to do. It's, you know, this is how I was brought up. This is, I was always volunteering. I was always trying to give. I always say, you know, giving is you know, the best thing you can do in life is to give to someone else. And it's not about money, and it's not about gaining, you know, artificial, not artificial, you know, it's not
intrinsic.
Houses and cars and then yeah, no, it's, you know, it's about, yeah, materialistic stuff. It's about really making an impact, making a difference, changing people's life, saving, you know, if you could not only change their life, if you can save their lives, that's, you know, that's, well, you know, that's the highest thing you can do, really. And I've been really, really blessed to help along the way. In many occasions, that's just, you know, one story, but my life is filled with, I was always, not always, but in many incidents, I was in the right place at the right time to do the right thing, and to help someone and to save someone. And I feel like, you know, it's not just maybe, you know, it's somebody's telling me something, sending me a message. But I definitely know that this is my mission, and my mission is to help. And today, this is how I help. And
again, sent by God, get used to hearing it. So I'm curious, though, Sagi, do you have any special training for working with victims of severe trauma, or have you been operating just solely on instinct?
So a couple of people asked me, what is my, you know, how, what is my method called, and what do I rely on, and what research, and what, I've read a lot of stuff, you know, and I know a lot of things, but it's mostly instinctive, and it's mostly, I build it as I go. That's the truth. I've been training wounded soldiers even before this war. So I've been volunteering in different in an organization when I was able to train wounded soldiers before the war. So I've been doing this for many years, and I had, as a young kid, as a teenager, I was volunteering at the hospital, and I was training amputees that had cancer. So, you know, everything in my life, just, you know, it's like everything happens for a reason. And I feel like this is, again, this is meant to be, and this is my mission in this world.
I'm so curious. Did your parents play a role in your decision to go volunteer in a hospital? Or did you, as a young man, just say, hey, I think I want to volunteer in a hospital?
Of course, you know, of course it comes from the house. It comes from you know, your parents and what you're raised on and your values and everything. My family is Orthodox. My father was a diplomat for many, many years, and I was always raised, you know, to do good. The most important thing, it doesn't matter if today I'm not religious. I'm not but my family is Orthodox, but they always say, you know, it doesn't matter if you're Orthodox or not, if you go to synagogue or not, the most important thing is to be a good man. And I always remember that was the sentence, just, you know, be a good person, do good. So it sticks. And this is what I was, you know, trying to do my whole life. I took my yarmulke off, but I think I've been doing exactly what my parents told me, which is to do good.
God's work. You're the king of the mitzvah. So I teach yoga, right? There's a lot of similarities between the skill set and mindset. Between what you're doing and what I'm doing, to tell you the truth. So I'm very fascinated with understanding, how would you say the training that you do with these soldiers affects them differently than their like physical and occupational therapies? Like, they're just doctor-based therapy.
So There's a very simple answer. They do, for everything else, it's small motorics. And with me, it's large motorics. With me, it's like, with me, it's punching and kicking and wrestling and touching and taking all the energy out. It's not playing with your fingers and trying to stabilize, which is good and important, and they need to do it. But with me, it's much more physical. And they are warriors, you know. This is exactly what they are. They are warriors and they are fighters, and they want to fight. They want to fight.
Absolutely. So the work you do with your warriors is extremely physical, as you've mentioned. That's just the tip of the iceberg. The real power of this practice comes from mindset. And use the concept of the switch, which perhaps not coincidentally is the same exact word that I use in the crux of all my masterclasses and workshops. In fact, that mental switch is so integral to my handstand program that those who embrace it experience tremendous success, and those who reject it generally fail in their efforts. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, how much of a determinant would you say mindset is with your soldiers and their success in your program?
So mindset is 95% of what we do, even 99. It's mindset is everything. This is what I always say, and this is the switch which you're talking about. And I always say, the first thing which I repeat in every class, every Krav Maga lesson, every military day that I was training the guys, I used to repeat this, and I used to work on the switch. And the switch is this: switching from a daily regular life, walking in the street or driving in your car, to a life and death situation, to war. You know, it's Israel. We cannot, of course, today, we understand exactly what it means, you know, of course, after October 7th, but it could happen, and it did happen before, not in this scale. But we have terrorist attacks every day in Israel. Every day there's a terrorist attack, either with a terrorist with a truck or a car trying to run over people and soldiers in bus stations, or it's a terrorist with a knife trying to stab people every day. So we need to be ready. And, you know, for me, training soldiers, they are a target. They are a bigger target. And I needed to, you know, them to understand that the switch is the mindset. And you know, not freezing. We have the three Fs, right, in extreme situations: fight, flight, and freeze. And I always told them, you know, you cannot freeze in those situations. You know, you have to act. You have to fight in order to save your lives. So this is the switch. And yes.
You see a difference in recovery? I mean, both physical and mental, in the soldiers who have had the privilege of training with you in the past versus those who had never met you before this war?
Good question. Yes. You know, I was thinking about it the other day. I have soldiers, my soldiers in my unit that trained with me before. And some of them are back at base in the military without legs. But they woke up every morning, 6 o'clock, at the hospital in rehabilitation, and they started working every day, every single day, from morning to night, whether it's physiotherapy or whether it's hydrotherapy or whether it's Krav Maga training with me. But the mindset of, you know, I'm not a victim, I am a warrior, and I'm gonna get through this, and I'll go back. You know, they always say, They told me, I'm out. We are out of the battlefield for now, but we are not out of the battle. And they want to go back to battle, and they do go back to battle. And this is, you know, not many people know about it. There's not many articles about it because you cannot talk about soldiers in the army and show faces. But we have many, many injured and wounded soldiers that went, they got injured and went back to fighting, went back to the army, even losing limbs. And really, it's I always say that's the biggest accomplishment, maybe.
Amazing. So you've obviously not only changed lives, but saved lives. But I'm curious how your time at Sheba has affected you personally and changed your life.
Perspectives, relativity. You know, you understand that everything in life is relative, and you have to take everything in perspectives. And one day you can, you know, you can do everything, and the next day, you know, you almost lost everything. And you know, even the such a small thin line between life and death, because everybody in the hospital, everybody that I train, was this close to dying. And everybody that I train next to them, their friends died, their teammates. So, you know, they always ask themselves, why me? Why did I survive? Why did 21 of my friends, everyone around me died and I survived? You know, so be thankful, first of all, for anything, everything you have in life, because you can lose it in a second. And then put on a smile. Don't feel sorry for yourself. Work hard. Try to impact. Try to do positive things. And you know, I'm still learning. this is what I've learned so far. But I'm still learning. Every day I learn.
Yeah, and you say you're not religious. I'm curious, however, do you still say Modei Ani when you wake up in the morning? Because what you just said to me was that prayer in action.
Yeah, I always say you don't have, no, I say, you know, you don't have to say the words, the exact words. Everybody, you know, I pray in my own way. I believe in God in my own way. And I, you know, I do what I do. I have my way. It doesn't mean I'm religious or not religious, or, you know, I don't want to define things, and you shouldn't define anything. That's my opinion.
Beautiful. Sagi, what's the most rewarding part of your work?
Well, as we said, you know, when I meet the soldiers that I've trained and they are back. I just yesterday I met a soldier. He was mortally wounded, like seriously wounded, and I trained him, and I saw him yesterday. He came to the hospital to visit some of his soldiers already, or teammates or friends. And he was wearing tactical uniform and had his rifle. And I asked him, what are you doing? What's up? And he said, I'm, you know, I have a day off. I went down from the north, and I'm going to Gaza tomorrow. And he's back fighting. So that's very rewarding. If you see a video I posted maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks ago of Michelle Okobotsin, she's the most wounded female soldier from October 7th. And after a year and a half of training her in a wheelchair, because she got shot 7 times, including her head. And after a year and a half of training her in a wheelchair, she said, okay, I'm ready to stand up this training session. And we went into the parallel bars in the physiotherapy room. And we took the wheelchair inside, and she stood up, and, you know, with help, of course. But she stood up and put gloves on her hands. And, you know, we were fighting while she was standing up, and there's nothing more rewarding than this.
And when you say that you save lives, I think that sometimes we don't understand what it really means to save a life, because it doesn't only just mean to keep a heart beating and a person moving and breathing. You are giving people a new life, and you have such an extraordinary level of patience in grace that that honestly are rarely seen in any human being. It's so remarkable to behold. I'm wondering, you put so much of yourself into this work. Have you ever had to give up on a soldier, or has anyone ever given up on you or your work, not you?
No, first of all, I don't give up. So, you know, I teach people not to give up. So I don't give up myself. So I try to implement that with my soldiers and with my wounded trainees. And no, I don't think anybody would give up on me, and I won't give up on anybody. And we are strong together.
I love it. You've said in interviews that one of the things you love the most is to just see these soldiers smile. What was the hardest smile for you to get out of a soldier, and how did you finally get it?
Wow. So many, you know, I have, every day I have, you know, tens of stories, and the hardest smile, you know, a lot of, so I'll tell you a story. I'll tell you a hard smile, but it's not exactly a hard smile, but at the beginning, I was training one of the double amputees, the beginning of the war. And, you know, at the beginning, they are in such a bad shape, and they are drugged, of course, painkillers. And it's a very, you know, they have to understand so many things. First of all, that they are alive and their friends are not. That they are, you know, that they are disabled. You know, if we're talking about a double amputee, a triple amputee, that their life is changed forever. And you know, it's a lot of taking in. So they're in, not a lot of smiles, not many smiles at the beginning at all. Of course, you cannot expect smiles from someone in this situation. But one of the guys, the double amputee, I started training him because he was a very tough guy, and in a very bad shape. But I felt he was elite soldier. It was commando, so you know he already has that resilience built in, at least in some level. And I was training him, and I put my camera on the side. I put my phone, and I filmed us because I wanted to show him something, you know, about his technique. And I showed him afterwards, and he looked at the video and he said, "Wow, you know, I feel like a warrior. I look like a warrior. You know, I look tough." And I thought of it as myself, as, you know, disabled and needy and such, you know, in such bad shape. And I can't look at myself in the mirror. But when I look at this video and I'm, you know, I'm putting my hands up and I look mean and I look tough and I look like a warrior again. So it made him feel good and it made him smile. And then I posted the video. That was maybe one of the first videos I posted, but that's a different story because I didn't have social media when I was in the military. I wasn't allowed to have, so I wasn't big. So I posted it and it got hundreds of thousands of comments and likes, and people were saying he inspired them. And then when he read the comments, he said, "Wow, I inspire people," and it made him feel even better. And smile. So that's your question. So then I thought maybe I have another role here, which is to share the stories and to help those guys, help our heroes, inspire others. And this is why I come to the States. I fly with them to get their prosthetics, but also to inspire, to give speaking, to get lectures and inspirational speaking engagements. And, you know, I feel like it's a win-win situation. So I've been doing that since.
Amazing. And I do want to say, as a side note, for anybody who does follow Thagi on Instagram, to be sure to read the messages that he writes in the descriptions, because they add such tremendous depth to videos that are already just on a visual level so profound. Your ability to master words is so emotional and so remarkable. Now, getting back to Soggy, and I know we have to wrap up in a few minutes, which makes me so sad. So
where's the watch?
we've got 15 minutes. So like you, also like a tremendous amount of the work that I do, particularly with children in my mini yogis program, also centers on special needs. Yes, the work is unbelievably rewarding. And as you could probably tell from the fact that I've already cried about 10 times in 45 minutes, it can also be overwhelmingly heartbreaking. And to be honest, sometimes as I'm teaching, I just want to break down and cry. Do you ever feel like you reached that emotional breaking point? And if so, how do you work through it?
First of all, thank you for the question. Not many people, you know, ask me, but some people ask me, they are very, you know, and they ask me, how are you doing? How are you feeling? Which is nice. I don't usually talk about my emotions or my feelings. Sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes it's hard. Sometimes I try to, you know, detach, because, you know, if you're in the hospital 24/7 and you're seeing everything I'm seeing, it's difficult. It's difficult. But I know, you know, I know what they are capable of reaching, and I know how they already reached it. And I know that they will become even greater and stronger, and they will change this country. I try to write it as much as possible that hopefully they will lead this country, not in the future, but today, tomorrow, because they are the future, and we need a change, and they are the ones to change, to bring the change. But there's a section in the hospital which is for vegetables. I don't know if that's the professional word to say, but
we would usually say
soldiers,
vegetative state.
Vegetative state. Mm-hmm. And I cannot work with them, but I go there and I talk to their families, I talk to their wives, to their kids, to their parents. Whenever I bring food, or I bring lunch, or I bring stuff that the people donate or bring, or I can bring, they are the first ones I go to, because they are, even, you know, it's not the wounded soldier, it's the family, and they are in the worst situation, I think, because, you know, the percentage that will go back to normal life, or will have, you know, it's really, really low, really, really low, and it's, you know, it's just heartbreaking. To be there and to see it, but I try to give strength. Again, I try to help as much as I can. But
Dougie, I don't even think you realize. I just asked how you take care of yourself, and what you answered is how you take care of others. It's so ingrained in who you are. I just got the chills saying that. It's so remarkable. How do you take care of yourself?
One day I will. One day when I have time, I'm taking care, being with my kids, playing with my kids. You know, again, if we talked about the perspectives and relativity, you know, I understand what's important in life, and but I will need to take care of myself someday. If you know, I will need a good vacation. Soon. So if any of you have a resort or a family resort, reach out.
I have a feeling there's a whole army of people who are going to step in to take care of you when all is said and done. I'm going to ask you
just one more word, because it's important, about it. It's connected to what you asked. So, you know, we talked about PTSD and post-trauma and my feelings, and how do I, you know, and I always say everybody in Israel, including myself, probably has PTSD in one level or another. but we are still in the trauma. We are not post-trauma. And, you know, including me, I'm in the trauma every day. I'm in war, in the hospital. It's a war zone. So yeah. I don't have time to you know, to think about it or to analyze it or to take care of myself. I don't feel like this is the time. I have to be strong for them, for the heroes. I need to be resilient for them to see me and look at me, myself as a model, as a role model of resiliency and strength. And so maybe after all the dust and the gunpowder is, you know, is over and gone, maybe then I'll take care of myself.
Israel is such a uniquely resilient nation. What I've heard from psychological professionals coming out of Israel, so you took out the post, the P from PTSD, they're taking out the D because it's not a disorder. It's emotional connection to a nation and to a mission, and it's been traumatic, and there is a difference. So as my last question, not because it's my last question, but because I know you've got other important things to do. Sagi, what does Am Yisrael Chai mean to you?
Mm-hmm. I try to end every post with Am Yisrael Chai. I try to end every interview with Am Yisrael Chai, because that's the true essence of what we are and what I'm trying to do. And Am Yisrael Chai means that we are a nation that knew many, many, many hardships and many struggles from, you know, from the Exodus and Haman and the Holocaust. And, you know, you name it, terror attacks on October 7th and pogroms and whatever it is in the Jewish history, you know, but we were strong and we fought and we came up on top, and we are still here even after October 7th. And because we are strong and we are resilient, and Am Yisrael Chai. We will show everybody that we live and we live and that we fight. I always say Am Yisrael Chai and fighting, because that's what I do. So Am Yisrael Chai and fighting.
Sagi, I've already said about 10 times, I'm going to say it one more time. You're one of the kindest, purest, and most inspiring souls I have ever had the honor of meeting in my life. Your life-saving work at Sheba is completely self-funded, and I am sure that all of our listeners are as deeply moved by your selfless commitment as I am and want to know what they can do to help support your work.
What can you do? First of all, send good vibes and send good energy. Second of all, I have a nonprofit in the States, a good friend of mine that said, whenever you're in the States and you're doing speaking engagements, everybody wants to pay through a nonprofit to get the tax deduction. I'll do everything for you. I'll do all the work behind and I'll get the link set and whatever. And every money that you earn as in the speaking engagements, when you bring the amputees, will go through me. So I have his Zelle account, which he will transfer, which can help. Yeah. Yeah. But so it helps my work. It helps me continue to train and volunteer. I have a couple of projects. It also funds some of the, when I don't get sponsors for lunch, I bring lunch sometimes from my own money, sometimes from different donations. So, or money that I got in the States, doing speaking engagements. So, that will help. I also right now I'm going to train Dor Almog, which I told you is an amazing guy. And the project is training him to get into the UFC and having a fight. And I want to train him like a professional athlete, like a professional MMA fighter. That's the reason he wakes up in the morning and not, you know, doing something else. This is the reason. So I said, I'll do everything possible to do that. So I want to bring, you know, other professional trainers, you know, strength and conditioning and psychologists, sports psychologists and masseuses and like, you know, like a professional athlete. So that costs money. Yeah. So Donations can also go to that project. And whenever, if anybody wants to bring us over to do speaking engagements and tell our inspirational stories, me and a wounded soldier, that always helps. And we will give you the most inspirational lecture. And all you have to do is pay us for that. So,
so I put the links to the to make tax deductible donations and also how to contact you from through LinkedIn for speaking engagements in the show notes in the video description. I am also on it on in the process of trying to bring you out to LA for various engagements. I can't a greater gift that I could help to give to this community.
That would be amazing.
I want to stay with you forever, and I'm going to have to say goodbye because you've got 4 minutes to get back to work. Sagi, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for the miracles that you're creating, and Am Yisrael Chai.
Am Yisrael Chai, thank you very much. And be strong.
Always. It's what we do.